You're listening to the Jewish Living Podcast. I'm Rabbi Nachum Meth. Shalom and welcome, everyone. We are going to get started on a new section of our Jewish Living series, Practical Jewish Halacha, Practical Jewish Living. For the next 3 weeks, as we get ready for Pesach, as we get ready for Passover, I thought it would be a smart idea if we got started. I want to make sure we're all ready for Pesach and we know some of the halachas, the pertinent law for Pesach. Now, a couple of maybe words of introduction. Tonight, we're going to try to start the laws of how to kosher your kitchen. That'll be tonight. Next week, we're going to try to do some of the laws of cleaning up and getting rid of chametz in general. And then the week after, we'll hit on the laws of the Seder. I'm not sure. My guess is we're not going to get divided so perfectly into those three segments. It's probably going to blur into one another, but we'll see how things go. A few just important, what I think are really important ideas when we talk about Pesach, and we talk about the laws and halacha of Pesach. Like everything in Judaism, there is a richness, there's a real depth to the halacha. Now, some people go overboard with the minutiae and detail, and it can become a little bit of an OCD, and people can become a little neurotic. That's obviously no good. That's an extreme. The other extreme is to say, details don't matter. Who cares? Let me just get the spirit of the law. Isn't that all that's important? And of course, that's not true either. What we need to do is make sure we're balancing. We're observing the laws. We have the halacha down clear, but we're not going crazy, nor are we obsessing. I actually think part of the richness of Pesach are the various details and the law and the halacha and the nuance. You know, like in Judaism, we don't just sit around the Thanksgiving table and talk about friends and family, and that's all it's about. There's obviously a lot more depth to the Pesach Seder. There's a lot more depth to Pesach in general. It's about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's about the Exodus. It's about our core beliefs of being Jewish. And the halachization, that's not a word, but we're going to pretend it's a word. The fact that the Torah gives it a halachic framework and context is actually part of the success of its continuity. Think about it. This upcoming year, Jews will now have sat down at Passover Seders for 3,336 years. I could tell you one thing for sure. If there wasn't any rigid halacha, if there wasn't, you have to eat this, you can't eat that, you have to get rid of all of these things and you have to do all of those things. If we didn't have those elements in our Jewish practice, I am confident that Pesach, Passover, Judaism in general would not have survived the millennia. The halacha, the fact that there is a certain element of do's and don'ts to Passover, and to, as I said, to Judaism in general, is part of the richness, and it's part, in my opinion, of the survival of Judaism. So let's take that message, and let's take that to heart when we talk about the halacha. There's a question or a comment.
I was just thinking, I'm going to, off the top of my head, say this, I don't know if this is true or not. I feel like it's the one thing we do that would be recognizable for 2000.
I could not agree more. Lauren pointed out, and I absolutely believe that's true within reason, within a certain range. But if you would be in a time warp and would sit down at a Passover Seder, certainly 1,500 years ago, it would be virtually identical to the Pesach Seder that we have now. There are a couple parts that they would say, they wouldn't say, and a couple of external differences, but the guts and the key parts would be exactly the same. And that is an amazing thing to think about the continuity of Judaism, is that we're doing the same thing basically, and certainly even the things that aren't the same, at the core, they're the same. Even from a halakhic perspective, they're exactly the same. Certainly since the times of the second Beis HaMikdash, no question. Since the times of the Anshei Knesset HaGadol, the men in the Great Assembly. And I think that's a beautiful idea. I want to also add an important point, which I feel is really significant. And that is, some people find Pesach to be incredibly stressful. Particularly, we find this, again, this is a demographic generalization, so I apologize, it doesn't hold true. Typically or historically, it's been the women who freak out when they talk about Pesach. The reason for that is sociologically, demographically, throughout the generations, the women were usually the ones who were in charge of most domestic affairs. So matters of keeping my house clean, cooking food, tended to be the woman's job. And because of that, there was a lot of pressure and burden that was placed on the women. And there's a certain reality to that. And of course, there is a certain amount of halacha, as we are going to discuss over the next 3 weeks, that we do have to keep in mind when it comes to Pesach observance. You got to get rid of all your chametz. You got to make sure all the food that you cook is kosher for Passover. You're going to have to clean certain things in your house. You're going to have to kosher certain parts of your kitchen. But here's the good news, and I'm here to tell you fundamentally, Pesach, Passover, need not be a stressful holiday. There is work that needs to be done. There's no question about it. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. Like anything that's worthwhile or valuable in life and in Judaism, preparation and a little bit of time, focus, and energy is just a necessity. There's no way around that. However, there are, and I've seen it with a lot of people, where people create unnecessary stress. And Pesach need not, it doesn't have, if you want to make it a super stressful holiday, you absolutely can. But it's not required, nor is it necessary to have a very meaningful Pesach. You can actually do it pretty simply. Personal anecdote or personal feelings, I find Pesach to be significantly less stressful than Sukkot. Sukkot, I got to build a sukkah. It's right after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and high holidays. My lulav, my esrog, I got a million and one things going on. Passover, it's really, as we're going to see, it's not as hard as what a lot of people think. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of mythology that's kind of crept in to the Jewish psyche about what Pesach is all about. And as we're going to see, it's really not all that, it's not all of it is true. A better way of saying it, not all of it is necessary. So let's keep that in mind. Another really important point, and I cannot underscore this enough. There will be inevitably, even with, you know, Rabbi Metz's caveats, it will require work and it's going to require time and a little bit of focus and tediousness and, if I may add, expense. Pesach is, there is expense. There's no way around it. There is an expense associated with it. The most important thing that we can do is make sure that we inject into our Passover preparations. When we're schwitzing away, when we're koshering the kitchen, let's make sure we inject joy. Our family, first of all, for ourselves. If it's a labor of love versus a labor of annoyance, it's all the difference in the world. Let's make it a labor of love for ourselves. When we krecht, "Oy, this is so difficult," we're sending a terrible message to ourselves that I don't really value and I don't really prioritize the hard work that I'm putting into this. And number two, if the whole, really one of the main mitzvahs, one of the primary, if not the primary theme of Passover is v'higadeta levincha b'yom ahu leimar, we are to tell our children the story. If we're telling our children the story of our heritage with a krechts, with without any joy, that's a disaster. We have to make sure we find the joy in what we're doing, and we can't hide it. We actually have to find it joyful. I happen to love kosher, as we're going to talk about tonight. Koshering for Passover is a ton of fun. I absolutely love it. You get to use hot, boiling things and blow things up and use fire, and it's amazing. I love Pesach, and I love the prep for Pesach, and I do a huge amount of the Pacemaker. Now, of course, my wife does a lot of the work as well, but I definitely pitch in. I hope. I'll let everyone can ask Panina to see if she agrees if I carry my share of the weight. But it's because I've consciously decided I need to make this a labor of love and I need to find the joy in it. So A, for myself, because I believe in the message of Passover, and B, perhaps more importantly, I want my kids to see Judaism is something that I love and cherish. It's expensive, it's time consuming, it requires a lot of work, and boy, do I love it. And that's an important message. So let's get started. Let's talk about tonight. Let's talk about what you need to do to keep your kitchen kosher. Again, next week we'll talk about you got to get rid of all your chametz. Of course, we're going to do that. But we need to make sure that our kitchens are kosher. There are different ways of koshering things. And your best bet, of course, is you get specific questions, reach out to a rabbi, reach out to myself, reach out to any of the Kol rabbis if you have specific questions. There are so many resources, and this is, again, another introduction which is taking a lot of time, but it's very important. There are so many easy resources out there. I've got here the Star K Passover guide. It's very helpful. The CRC has a Passover guide. It's thick, but it's really not. It's half of its advertisements, and you can just flip to the pages that you need very easily. The OU put out a Passover guide. The CRC has their guide on their app. It's fantastic. And you'll find you'll have questions. Reach out to myself, Rabbi Gitanik, Rabbi Davidowitz, Rabbi Goldman. Happy to answer your questions. I shouldn't tell you this, but half the time when people ask me questions, I'm like, let me think about that. That's a great question. And I scramble to find one of the books and I look for it. Not to minimize it, I do have a little bit, if you're a rabbi, you know where to find the answer, even if you don't know the answer in your by heart. It is, we're a little bit more familiar with where of finding stuff out. But my point is the answers are very accessible. Let's talk about things about koshering for Passover. Things that cannot be koshered, you're just gonna have to put them away for Passover. China, pottery, earthenware, cement, concrete, enameled pots can't be koshered for Passover. Any china dish, things like that, you've got to put those away. That's not going to work for Passover. Glass and crystal, we try to avoid koshering. If you're an Ashkenazic Jew, we try to put them away for Passover. Something that I will just tell you, ignoring whether you can or can't, heavy used pots, certainly any pan. Frying pans, don't bother koshering them. Get yourself a new set of frying pans. If you're asking me, a set of pots, you know, let's say a pot that you cook soup in theory can be koshered. Don't do it. Get yourself for Passover a new set of dishes, basic dishes, a set of dairy, a set of meat. Get a new set. Doesn't have to be a fancy set, a basic set. It's not going to cost you a lot of money. Get it, invest in it, and use it for the rest of your lives. Flatware. Silverware can be koshered. And let me talk about the way to kosher small metal objects like flatware. It's a process called hagala. If you're not sure how to do it and you need help, I am sure, I'll be doing hagala at some point. Other people will be doing hagala as well. If these are things that you want to kosher, you can do that. I suggest strongly you should get a separate set of flatware for Passover as well, dairy and meat. It's going to make your life simpler and easier. But in theory, just to mention, these things can be koshered. The basic structure is you get a very, very big pot. It doesn't have to be a kosher for Passover pot. It could even be a non-kosher for Passover pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours. You bring it to a very, very rapid boil. And what you're going to do is you're going to put each item into the boiling water and take it out. How are you going to do that without scalding your hand? So you have to be very creative in a net, in either if you have some kind of very protective glove. You have to have a way because you can't it has to be totally nothing touching it when it's in. But that's simply what Haggadah is. You take, a fork or a spoon, knives, if it's cutlery knives is one thing. Knives that are really used for cutting stuff, I would avoid. Even cutlery knives, it's not great, but it can be done. You put it in boiling hot water, take it out, put it into cold water, and it's good to go. With one caveat, you should, after waiting 24 hours since its last use. So if you have a fork, a spoon, hasn't been used in 24 hours, you then boil up a big pot, put it in for a quarter of a second, take it out, and that's how you do hagala for flatware.
And again, the pot being used.
The pot that's being used does not need to be kosher for Passover. Okay, but just as long as it's not used in the last 24 hours. Kiddush cups. Okay, this is where Haggadah will usually, where most people use this process of Haggadah, is for your Kiddush cup. You've got your, but again, avoiding glass, although even if it's glass, it's Kiddush cup, it's only used for cold, it's probably okay. But if you have a silver Kiddush cup, that exactly, that'd be the type of thing where most people, if they're ever doing Haggadah, most people, by the way, most people don't do Haggadah over, you know, getting transitioning for Passover. But if you need to, that's what you do. It's really not complicated. If you have questions, want to see how it works, I'm sure you could find a good YouTube video. I believe the CRC has videos on how to do Haggadah, and that's what you would do.
Yes.
Barbara's pointing out the reason why most people don't do Haggadah typically in their Pesach prep is it's a good point. Your life is a lot easier if you just have your Passover dishes. Most Jewish wives and Jewish moms and Jewish bubbies, they don't want Haggadah going on anywhere. They've got their Passover dishes. They've got the rest of the year dishes and never the twain shall meet. They don't want to hear from Haggadah. And that's fine. And that's probably in a certain sense a best practice, not from a halachic perspective, but just from like, keep the two separate and your life is simpler. But if you need to, I do Haggadah on a couple of things that I find it simpler and I will do it. And that's fine. But again, a good example would be doing Haggadah on an entire set of silverware is going to be a pain in the neck. So I would avoid it. Question. Okay, glasses. What's the story with glasses? I would suggest it's a matter of halachic complexity. Get new sets of glasses. Get new sets of glasses. Glass is complicated, certainly for Ashkenazic Jewry, for koshering. Sephardim will tend to be a little bit more lenient, and Sephardim are more comfortable with glass. So for Sephardim, it's okay. But that's the story. Again, I have over here drinking glasses. The Ashkenazic custom is that drinking glasses made of glass may not be koshered. If there's some exception, that's fine. But, you know, some extenuating circumstance, you know, reach out. But otherwise, you should get new sets of glasses.
In regards to purchasing a separate set, if we've been fortunate enough where we've been parented by one grandparent's set, or another grandparent's set, we purchased our own, and we don't know where we're even going to put that.
Okay. 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 We're going to have to, maybe let's talk offline. That's a very specific example. If you have like, I've got a million sets and old sets, what do we do? Yeah. It's going to be a little tricky. You might just have to get another set, but maybe let's talk offline about how to handle that kind of situation. Let's zip through a couple other really important things. Tablecloths, if you have cloth tablecloths, you can just launder them and they're fine. Vinyl tablecloths should not be used. The ones that you use during the year, just get new tablecloths for Passover. But if you have cloth tablecloths, that's fine. Electric mixers, food processors, and blenders. Now, in theory, you can do Haggadah with these types of things. Don't do it. And here's why. If you have a blender, food processor, mixers, stuff gets everywhere with these things. And yes, you can kosher it, but what about the fact that there's grain or flour or who knows what inside the guts of these machines? That is what happens. That's always been my experience. So don't kosher. Get new blenders. Get a new food processor. Unless it really is, you know, totally encased, then no food ever gets inside. But that doesn't happen. A KitchenAid, it gets inside. A blender gets inside. Food processor, stuff gets inside the mechanisms. So just get yourself, and again, this is where it can be a little expensive, or come up with a menu that doesn't require food processors, blenders, and things like that. Handheld blenders are like $18 on Amazon. So I would, it's a good thing to have. Food processors, you don't have to get the most expensive thing. You're only using it 8 days a year. And even then it's not, you know, not the full 8 days, but I would get a new one. Don't bother koshering it. Let's talk about sinks and countertops. As we get to some of the bigger things, sinks and countertops, they are not kosher for Passover. So you need to kosher them. So that can be done in one of two ways, depending on what's going on. One option is, and this is what growing up, what I used to do, is we didn't really kosher any of it. Everything was covered. My dad of blessed memory used to have these huge sink inserts that we would put in for Passover, one for dairy, one for meat. He would cover the whole kitchen, the whole sink with these metal inserts. I don't know if they sell these things. I don't know how they make them or if they do, but that's what we had growing up. And our countertops were covered with, they sell these cuttable types of like plastic material. It's like a thick, maybe an eighth of an inch material. I don't know what it's called, but people here in the community have it, and you cut it to size and you put it away every Passover. This is what a lot of Jews do, and that's fine. You, in theory, can kosher your countertops, and I would recommend koshering your sink as well. The way you do that is a process called eroy. Eroy. Eroy means pouring. And this is where we have, in my household, a ton of fun. Most people freak out with this, and I get it. But if you're a guy like me, and you like blowing things up, and making huge messes, and saying, I'm doing God's work, I'm allowed to make a mess, this is amazing. What you do is you're basically going to be pouring boiling hot water. You're going to bring water in a tea kettle. It's fine. It doesn't have to be a kosher Passover tea kettle. Again, assuming it wasn't used for 24 hours is the best way to do it. Boil up water in a hot pot or a tea kettle, and you pour it directly over every surface that needs to be koshered. So in a sink, you want to get the spigot. My spigot, now always the problem is the spigot's going down. So I have mine that is able to pull out and pour and pull it up so you can pour it over it. And you want to pour it over every inch, every millimeter of the sink, the handle, the spigot, the spout, the inside, and you're good to go. You've now koshered your sink. That little trap, that little mesh trap, get a new one for Passover. Don't kosher it. They cost 10 cents. Get a new one. You've now koshered your sink. Let me just make sure I cover all points. Can you kosher every kind of sink? The answer is no. However, most sinks, not according to all opinions, but if you're asking me, following the CRC, I know the Starkey, others are a little bit more stringent, but I will tell you as follows. Any stainless steel sink can be koshered. Any Corian sink, those are very popular here in Vegas, where it's some kind of crushed stone. It's like an enameled crushed stone. Not everyone agrees with this, so I want to put that out there. But if you're asking me, we do kosher them here at the Kollel. That's not a unanimous opinion, but that's what we do. And you're going to just do this eroy over every millimeter, over every inch of the sink. For countertops, it's the same exact thing. You're going to pour over every inch of that countertop with directly from boiling water, which means I'm going to go through probably, if I recall, it's about 8 or 9 boilings. I'm going to have to go about 8 or 9 cycles for me to cover every single inch of my countertops. No, because the Shabbos Ring doesn't get it to a solid. If it comes to a boil, you can do whatever you want. It does. I find just something that I can hold with my hand is just a lot easier to really make sure I'm getting every inch with the countertop. Countertops that are stainless steel can be koshered. Formica is a little tricky. It's not great. Some people say yes. Some people say no. Those bath tiles that they sell here in Vegas, they have those tiled countertops that are made of like ceramic, not great. So I would just cover it. But if you have granite, Corian, crushed stone, stainless steel, things like that, you can kosher. With one other caveat, if you have a crack in any of it, that area can't be koshered. What does that mean? Kosher everything else and just make sure. The truth of the matter is, koshering your countertop is an overstated thing, because really you don't need to kosher your countertops. I recommend that you do and cover them also, but technically speaking, you don't. So long that you don't put anything hot on your countertop directly, you can work in a totally not kosher kitchen, and that's fine. Anyways, I'm going to recommend, even after koshering your countertop, make sure you have trivets or towels. Nothing hot should go directly on your countertop. Honestly, that's best practice throughout the year. Again, it's not required. You can have a dairy section of your kitchen and a meat section of your kitchen. You're fine. You could put stuff directly down on your countertop. Happens to be it's probably not so good for the stone or for the stainless steel or for anything to begin with. But If you kosher your countertops, just you still use trivets. If you have cracks and you can't kosher those areas of cracks, so just make sure you're very conscious that area, I don't put anything hot down on that area. We had a couple of questions. I'm sorry. No good.
So we're not using the surfaces all
24 hours? Yeah. Oh. Thank you very much. Oh my gosh. Before koshering sinks and doing that Eroi, this is the hardest. Oh my gosh. I can't believe I forgot. That's the most important thing. Don't put it, don't turn your hot water on your sink off. You can use your sink off. What I always do is I just turn the hot water off on my sink. Nothing hot on the countertops or on your sinks. Anything that you're doing Eroi on, this pouring of the hot water, you got to make sure that the hot water, there's nothing hot on it for 24 hours before you do, number one. And number two, it should be very clean. Make sure you use a cleaner, a 409, Lysol, clean it off really well. Do that and you're, and 24 hours, and then you do this Eroi.
And last question.
No, if you're covering your counters, you don't need to kosher it. But if you're not covering your counters, I don't kosher my counters anymore. I don't cover my counters. I do kosher because I find them fun. Now someone asks, but Rabbi, isn't there going to be boiling water all over the place? The answer is yes. I go through about 20 towels. I cover my entire kitchen with towel after towel after towel. And that's what I do. And I have a ton of fun. Yes. Yes. By the way, my entire kitchen, people think, oh my gosh, it's so much work to do my whole kitchen, to flip my kitchen from being kosher, not kosher for Passover to kosher for Passover. Again, you have that 24 hours where everything is basically off. So I'm not using it because nothing is on, but the actual work, not even a third of a day. It's a couple hours. That's it. 3 hours, maybe. And half of it is just schlepping, which I just have my kids. We do it as a, you know, bucket brigade. We get everything out of our pantry and we move it, you know, into the garage. That it's just schlepping. It's not a ton of work, and you just get a bunch of kids and that works. Everyone loves it. We all love it. Everyone, we have a ton of fun. It's part of the experience. It's part of the holiday. Speaking of things like pantries, cupboards, things like that, in theory, if there was non-kosher for Passover stuff stored in those locations, you obviously, if you want to use those spots, obviously you got to take the stuff out. The tradition, it's not really required, but I will encourage everyone to do it. It is the tradition as we put some kind of liner down, even though you're not putting anything hot in there, so it really doesn't matter. But again, clean it out well. That's the most important thing. You don't want there to be any crumbs or pretzels or Cheerios or things like that. You clean it out well. Get a vacuum if it's like a drawer, and you, or take the drawer out and you know, spill it out, and then just put some kind of liner. It could be any kind of liner in there. Is that's what Klal Yisrael, that's what the Jewish people do, even though it's not really necessary. Same thing with your fridge. Tradition is on our fridge, even though you don't really need to, strictly speaking, but it's a good idea. We clean out our fridge. You don't need to do anything else to kosher your fridge. You just take everything out of your fridge, clean it really well so there's no actual chametz in there. There's no, you know, you spilled some mushroom barley soup on the, you know, you want to clean that up. We line it, and again, the lining isn't so necessary, but that's what Klal Yisrael does. So we get this stuff, this product, they sell it in the dollar store. Sorry. They sell these products in the dollar store. It's called shelf liners. It's like a spongy, it's like, yeah, it costs nothing. It's like, they sell stuff that's papery. That's fine. Yeah. So we found this rubbery, I'll have to show you, ask Panina. Yeah. It's like almost like the one we have is like mesh almost. It's like, it's in a roll and you just cut it. It works perfectly. I save it year to year. Yeah, it's not, again, not expensive at all. And that's what we do. Don't use it. Don't. People have these steaming devices. Don't use it. Just do good old-fashioned Eroi tea kettle, electric kettle. That's the simplest and best way to do it. the hour's late and I'm going to have to end a few minutes early. So we're just going to have to continue next week with, but we're almost, I'm telling you, it's not that much for kitchen stuff. Let's talk about your oven and your stovetop. Okay. Your oven. If you have a self clean in your oven, just run it and say, thank you, God and GE for inventing the self clean. And it's the greatest thing in the world. Just once and you're done. No. It's nice if you want to do a little, put some off with, you know, that off stuff, do a little bit of oven clear, but one time self clean, you're good to go. Your oven is good. Make sure the racks are in the oven and you're fine. Good to go. If your oven doesn't have a self clean setting, return your oven. No, they're the greatest thing from a kosher kitchen perspective. Self-cleaning ovens are amazing. They're really, really helpful. If you don't, so next oven, if you're planning on getting a new oven, make sure you get one that's self-cleaning. They will make your life so much easier. And they happen to actually work. They do clean it and your ovens get disgusting. But word of caution, you can't use the self-oven function does decrease your oven's longevity. So don't do it too often. Don't do it once a week. You should be doing it at most quarterly. But for sure, before Passover, running the self-clean is super duper helpful, and it's great. If you don't have a self-oven, if you can get your oven has a setting, if it can get it to 550, turn it to 550 for 45 minutes. Broil. Yeah, most will get that hot. I would just say before you do that, then I would actually make sure you use like Easy Off or whatever that, oven off, one of those things. Do a good cleaning of it beforehand. Which again, you're going to want to do anyways because they get gross. Do a good cleaning of your oven and use 550. 550. If it doesn't get to 550, 500 is good enough as well for 45 minutes. Stovetops are complicated. They're not that complicated. Depends what kind of stovetop you've got. If you've got a gas stovetop, what I would recommend to do is you take the grills or the whatever they're, the grates off. I throw it in with the self-clean. Okay? Word of caution. It will probably make the outer, it's not going to ruin them, but it won't be shiny anymore. So you have to be aware they're not going to be as beautiful as they were beforehand, but they will survive. Put them in your self-clean and you're good to go. If you don't want to do that, see if you can buy new grates. That would be the best thing. If you could buy new grates, it will make your life easier. They're going to be a little expensive, but have Passover ones. If you can't do that, there are ways of koshering it, which are tricky. You can like cover each one with foil, turn it, you know, cover it, make a tent over each one with foil, turn it on high for about 15 minutes. Again, it might discolor it anyway. I doubt it will, but... most of the time they're fine in the oven, but buyer beware. Sometimes they will get a little, they're not going to, yeah. It'll lose some of the shine, but that's it. You then do that. You then cover the rest of the surface with foil. There is usually that little piece where the gas, that little removable cap, needs to be covered in foil, but just got to make sure you got to do that very carefully so it doesn't restrict the gas flow. Go for it. If you can self-clean that too. I've never done that. Does it work? So maybe I'll do that. But cover that in foil. Cover the rest of your stove with foil, at stovetop with foil as well. But be careful. Your venting of your oven sometimes comes out from somewhere there. You don't want to block the venting of your oven. It'll mess up your stovetop. Okay? Electric coil. If you have an electric oven, electric stovetop with coils, same. Those are actually easier. You're going to cover all everything else. And turn those coils are actually the easiest thing to kosher. You turn them on, turn them till they're red hot for 10 minutes, not even, and you're fine. Glass tops are a pain in the neck. They're not good for Jewish consumers. Different people will tell you different things of what to do. Here's what I will tell you to do. The problem is you can kosher the part of the stovetop where the actually turns red. The problem is in between the elements, you cannot kosher and you cannot cover either or you'll break your stovetop. So here's what I recommend. Clean the stovetop after waiting 24 hours. Clean the stovetop as well as you can. Then turn each element on high for 15 minutes. And then what I would do for Passover, I've done this even, honestly, I do this even in houses. If I ever go to a place that has a glass stovetop, I find some kind of metal disc that's smaller than the size of the heating element. And I leave that on the element so that the pots that I cook are never in direct contact with the glass surface. That's best practice. Will other people say you don't even need to do that? Yes, but that's what I would recommend. Glass surface stovetops are a pain in the neck. There's just no way around it. And that's what you do. You do that and you're fine. And that's for ovens and stoves. Let's end with microwaves and let's call it a day because I got to run. Microwaves. Different opinions will tell you different things. I try to avoid kosher. Here's what you if you want a kosher microwave, here's the what you definitely need to do. Don't use it for 24 hours. Clean it super well. Really well. And there's just keep in mind, there can be junk all in your microwave. Clean it out in the nooks and crevices and stuff like that. That glass or, you know, tray, you have to get rid of. You cannot use that on Passover. And then what you do is you're going to put a cup of water in there. Let's say a styrofoam cup after not using your microwave oven for 24 hours. Put it in the microwave for 5 minutes, which should make the water, with water, it should boil over. Move that cup to a different spot in your microwave. Put it in for another two minutes. That way it's in two different spots. And now your microwave is kosher for Passover. With the one caveat, there are opinions that don't love koshering microwaves. I try to avoid it if I can. What I usually end up doing is I kosher it just to be sure. And if we need it, we use it, but I try not to use it. We've just gone through most things in your kitchen. I'm sure many of you have other, and I'm sure I left some things out, but the hour's late, so I'm going to hold it here. If anyone has any questions, again, always feel free to reach out. And please God, next week, we'll try to finish off if there's something we didn't touch on in the kitchen. We'll get to it, as well as the rest of our houses, and it's going to be amazing. But why don't we end with just another question or three? Dishwashers don't kosher for Passover. Okay, don't kosher. Dishwashers for Passover. Okay. Any other questions before we go? That's your basic. It's really, and I want to emphasize, it's really not that complex unless you want to make it complex. Rabbi, I want to be able to kosher my sous vide that my great grandma gave. Like, then it will be complicated. But if you want to just get by, think of it as you don't need to have every utensil in the world. Just get by. Pretend you're back in college and you have like a beginner set. I mean, you don't need that much stuff to have an amazing, healthy, nutritious, delicious, you know, Passover, and it's going to be amazing. And I really want to just like emphasize it. I'm telling you, you ask my kids, don't ask me, ask my kids what their favorite holiday is. They will, I'm sure, all tell you it's Passover. And which is counterintuitive. Most people freak out with it. You don't need to freak out. Make it a joyful holiday. Make all those chores. It's a mitzvah. It's awesome. It's fun. This is our way of connecting. And we value all the details. Find the joy in Passover. And I'm telling you, it's not hard. It's all attitude. I cannot wait to kosher my kitchen. All right. Thank you all for coming. And please God, we'll see you all next week. Please God, thank you all for coming.
You've been listening to the Jewish Living Podcast with Rabbi Nachum Math. Please do us a favor and like and share this podcast, ask a question, or leave a comment.